Good morning. On today's programme, Canada to introduce new curbs on immigration and China's influence in Athens. But first we go to India, and air pollution in India's capital city of Delhi has risen to alarming levels. The Air Quality Index, or AQI, hit over 450 in many parts of the city, which is 10 times the acceptable limit set by the World Health Organization. The state government has announced emergency measures like banning construction activities and announced early winter breaks for schools. Delhi's pollution has been a perennial problem in winter for years now, but a lack of political will to find solutions has led to hopelessness among the megacity's residents. Shalu Yadav reports on what it's like living in the city.
It's that time of the year again. I've woken up with a headache and a burning sensation in my eyes. As I raise the curtains of my window, a sense of deja vu hits me. I stare at the thick smog and try to pierce through the haze to see across the street. But the visibility is so bad, I can barely see past five buildings. Pollution is actually a year-round problem in this megacity of 30 million people. The AQI, or the Air Quality Index, in summers is still categorized as unhealthy, but it's only when the skies are no longer blue that it starts to hit the people living in the city. The air turns especially toxic as farmers in the neighboring states burn crop remnants, causing huge plumes of smoke that get suspended in the air because of low wind speeds. And then there's a regular issue of emission from thousands of vehicles and industries and dust due to construction activities as the city continues to expand. And then comes the Hindu festival of Diwali, when millions of firecrackers are burst to celebrate, making things bad to worse in a single day. A thick layer of smog engulfs the city, taking the AQI limits in some parts to as high as 900, beyond which even AQI reading machines fail to measure the level of pollution. That's how bad the situation is every winter. The city is described as a gas chamber, with an apocalyptic sight of the outdoors that looms until the end of January. My mornings for the next 2 months will start with opening my AQI app on my phone to check the level of pollution outside. That level decides whether I go for an outdoor run or find a safe indoor space in a gym where air purifiers are showcased as a premium facility. But some days I don't need the AQI app to test the pollution levels. I can taste the pollutants in my mouth and feel it in my nose. My lungs feel like an overworked machine that needs a break. The pollution is so detrimental that some studies suggest that breathing it in is as dangerous as smoking about 2 dozen cigarettes a day. Another study says that pollution is shortening the lives of those living in Delhi by 10 years. An estimated 1.7 million Indians died due to pollution-related disease in 2019. Hospitals in the city have started to fill up with emergency cases of those struggling to breathe and suffering nauseating headaches with burning sensation in their eyes. The elderly and children are the worst affected. According to UNICEF, children who breathe polluted air are at a higher risk of developing acute respiratory diseases. And it is for this reason that the Delhi government closed the schools for 10 days in early November. But it's not just the education that the children are missing out on, it's their childhood as well. They miss going outdoors to play with their friends. For some young couples in Delhi, pollution is becoming a factor in deciding whether to have children at all. My husband and I have been intently discussing if we should plan our first baby and raise her in this city or move to another city. It's a scary thought, seeing our future kid gasping for breath and suffering breathing problems like so many other kids in Delhi. With climate change becoming a living room discussion in people's lives here, Delhi is fast losing its appeal with cycles of extreme heat, monsoon floods and pollution through the year. This hopelessness has arisen because of repeated failures of the government to solve the air pollution problem. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court of India reprimanded the Delhi government and said that the choking air quality is responsible for the murder of people's health. The court even went to the lengths of banning firecrackers on Diwali, but the ban was thrown to the wind as thousands of people openly burst crackers, leading to a thick layer of smog in the air the following day. The Aam Aadmi Party, or AAP, which governs Delhi, says that the federal government ruled by Prime Minister Modi's BJP party has rejected its solutions. But the federal government blames AAP for the disaster, as it's now in power in the northern state of Punjab, where farmers burn the crop residue that is one of the leading causes of the pollution. farmers being their major vote bank, the Aam Aadmi Party has failed to crack down on the burning of crop residue. And in this vicious cycle of political incompetence, another winter season has become a season of slow death for the people of Delhi. For World Report, this is Shalu Yadav in Delhi.
Next, we go to Canada. This year, that country's population reached 40 million, a number achieved in no small measure by a flood of immigrants. Ottawa has been working hard over the past few years to attract immigrants and boost immigration levels. But the immigration minister recently announced that there would be a levelling out of the number of new permanent residents allowed into the country by 2026. This after the Liberal government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had been aggressively increasing targets over the past several years. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the numbers may just be a case of too many too soon.
Canada's population recently reached 40 million people, an historic milestone. It came in part due to that aggressive increase in the number of immigrants, from 10 years ago when the number was just over 200,000 a year, to last year when the number reached more than 437,000. There was also a new increase in the number of non-permanent residents estimated at more than 600,000. Both numbers, according to Statistics Canada, represent the highest levels on record. Those immigrants went to all provinces and territories with work and study permits as well as asylum claims, many from people fleeing the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But Immigration Minister Mark Miller recently announced new immigration targets for the next 3 years, which call for the number of new permanent residents to hold at 500,000 in 2026. Plans for 2024 and 2025 would increase, maybe. The huge increases have come under increasing scrutiny as Ottawa continues to face pressure about where to put all the newcomers, mainly because of a national shortage of available and affordable housing. Miller says that's balanced against what immigrants bring to Canada's economic growth and labour market. They will help set the pace of our economic and population growth, he says, while moderating the impact on critical systems such as infrastructure and housing. And Miller says pausing growth in 2026 would allow the government to take the time to understand what the actual impact on the country would be. Miller says Canadians are asking the government to get a little more organized. But it could be deeper than that. A recent survey found that a growing number of Canadians believe immigration levels are too high. Their biggest concern is the effect newcomers might have on the availability of affordable housing. Those concerns were one of the main highlights of the latest Focus Canada Public Research Survey, which was conducted by the Toronto-based Environics Institute, and the findings reflect a dramatic shift from a year ago, when public support for immigration numbers was at an all-time high and capped a trend in favor of more newcomers that went back 30 years. The survey found that the gap between those who agree and disagree about immigration levels has shrunk in the past year from 42% to just 7%. And it's mostly prevalent in provinces such as Ontario and British Columbia, where more people appear pessimistic about the state of the economy, mainly because of high inflation and the cost of living, along with housing affordability and interest rates as the top issues. Polling by another research company also found that housing has become the second highest issue of concern to Canadians following inflation. Coupled with the fact that 98% of the population growth came from international migration, some began to doubt whether those immigration levels were sustainable. It's not that Canadians don't see the value and benefits of newcomers in their local community, multicultural diversity, contributions to the economy, and jobs. It's the concern over housing that's causing most people to feel financial stress. There's another problem. The system itself may be facing a backlash as Canada has not been the promised land for many of those immigrants. New research suggests that immigrants to Canada are increasingly leaving for opportunities elsewhere. Another study, this one by the Institute for Canadian Citizenship and the Conference Board of Canada, shows that the number of immigrants who left surged in 2017 and 2019, spikes that represent an increase of 31% above the historical average. And it's been steadily increasing since the 1980s. The Conference Board of Canada says the country's future prosperity depends on immigration. The benefits are realized over time. The longer people stay, the more they benefit and contribute, and immigrants who thrive are more likely to stay. The study suggests that Canada must not only attract newcomers, but also retain them, and that should be part of the immigration strategy. Many who came to Canada and have now left or are leaving say they were influenced by a sense of belonging, racism, home ownership, or lack of it, and economic opportunities in other countries. Many also say the high cost of living and the competition for jobs and housing have driven them to look elsewhere. One man who practiced dentistry in India says he's tried to land a job suitable to his training and education, and after 2,000 applications, he's received only one interview. He also says he and his family found Canada's cold climate hard on their physical and mental well-being. Many newcomers agree that Canada's immigration works well at getting people here, but not at setting them up for a successful future after they've invested some time here. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to Athens. Greece was one of the worst-hit countries after the Eurozone debt crisis over a decade ago, but it has staged a strong recovery, thanks in no small part to money and investment from China. Chinese business people were offered passports in return for investment, and Athens is now displaying the influence of its links with China, as Mark Godfrey reports.
Athens bears the scars of the debt crisis which tore through this Mediterranean economy during the past decade. The reminders of recession are visible in empty, graffitied buildings, even in the city centre. Just south of the Ammonia subway station, other buildings have reopened with Mandarin language shop fronts. There's plenty of interest for Greeks with less to spend in recent years. There are shoe shops with wares straight from factories on China's east coast. And there's Mr. Gao, who stocks his store with hardware from the container that arrived this month. None of the brands are recognizable, but the goods are. Soldering irons, spirit levels, spray painting guns, they're all here, at a fraction of the cost you'd pay in a DIY store in Dublin. The factories we source from make hardware items for well-known Western hardware brands, Mr. Gao assured me. All kinds of household items, from cooking utensils to doormats, line the shelves next door in a shop operated by the Liu family, who hail from Fuzhou, a city on China's east coast, famous for manufacturing and outward migration. Getting goods here isn't difficult. After all, a Chinese state-owned company, Costco, controls Piraeus Port. It's a gateway to Athens and to southern Europe. Greece is one of the world's great seafaring nations, home to a vast merchant navy and to shipping fortunes like that of the Onassis family. But a bankrupted state sold the port a decade ago. The Greek shipping magnates are dwarfed by the company which now owns their largest port. Containers loaded at Costco ports in China seamlessly arrive in Athens a month later. People like Mr. Gao have taken advantage of the economic crisis in Greece, which has offered passports in return for Chinese investment. Mr. Gao said he grasped the opportunity in 2014 to get EU citizenship by investing all his family's savings in a bankrupted business in the heart of Athens. Today the Greek economy is growing again, but funds are tight and bargains are in demand. Gardeners and builders who work in the salubrious neighbourhoods of Athens continue to buy their tools from Mr. Gao. My visit to Athens coincided with a grand meeting in Beijing. This was the conference of the Belt and Road Initiative, attended by leaders of some of the countries who have signed on. The Belt and Road is China's blueprint to secure markets by building infrastructure like railways and ports. Shipping Chinese goods to places like Athens has always been a priority for China's government. Its goal has been to secure markets for the huge volumes of goods churned out by China's factories. But migrants selling hardware or shoes in an EU capital isn't the end goal of the Belt and Road Initiative. Down at Piraeus Port, I watched more valuable goods being unloaded, like the Chinese-made cars, tractors and trucks arriving for transshipment to buyers in the Balkans. China has become the world's largest exporter of cars, thanks to its early embrace of electric vehicles. A Greek trader coming to collect a consignment of forklifts explained how Chinese prices remain well below the rates he'd pay for German machines, and the quality gap between the two has shrunk. The trader didn't hesitate when I asked him how his Chinese suppliers can undercut European peers. I'm buying from a state-owned company that has cheaper finance and lower costs, and they won't be allowed to go bankrupt if they're loss-making. It sounds like unfair competition, I suggest. But they sell well in the poorer markets of Europe, says the trader, whose forklifts were headed to buyers in Bulgaria and Montenegro. The Mandarin language shopfronts aren't the only signs in Athens of a closer relationship with Beijing. Coachloads of Chinese tourists disembarked every evening at my hotel. While it has struggled under EU loan programs, Greece has become very welcoming of Chinese investors and visitors. Athens is instructive of how the Belt and Road Initiative is supposed to work, with a Chinese-owned port making a path for Chinese goods. European manufacturers are watching closely. Greece's financial crisis may have been China's opportunity. For World Report, this is Mark Godfrey in Athens.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.